our members, ladies and gentlemen, may I officially declare this meeting open. Let me all welcome all present today, in particular the presence of the Deputy Minister, Mr. Enver Sotty, in our midst. We have requested that either the Minister or Deputy Minister join us today, and that decision arises from our last week engagements with the Department, the National Treasury, as well as the province of Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape. We were supposed to have met with four provinces. Unfortunately, Limpopo and KZN could not attend, and we felt that a meeting be reconvened again this week. But most important, the reason, Deputy Minister, to want yourselves to be here as political heads was the fact that we last week we started this process. We are in this process of calling provinces to give us reports on the fourth quarter spending on the conditional grants relevant to each and every department. So we met last week and we deliberated on the two provinces. And we also engaged with the report from the national department. But unfortunately, we had to request the department to go back and prepare the report thoroughly because we, at that stage, identified a number of inconsistencies in the report and number of gaps in terms of information relating to other provinces, inconsistency relating to the figures not tallying in terms of the breakdown that were given. So we did not, we said we wouldn't want a situation where we table incorrect reports in Parliament and then afforded the department to go back and prepare a quite thorough and accurate report. And in that we also agreed as a committee that an invitation be extended to either the minister or yourself so that you can be able to clarify the committee on the developments regarding the school infrastructure backlog grant itself, as it's one grant that is driven from national. And with regard to the Naledi conditional grants and technical secondary schools, that's the only two grants where we would expect KZN and Limpopo to talk to when they get an opportunity to make their presentation. But we would also, Honorable Deputy Minister, prefer a situation, we understand your tight schedule, but where possible, as and when we call provinces to engage with them on those grants that are relevant to the department, that you try your best to be part of those, because it saves us time also of reporting to you after the meetings some of the shortfalls or the weaknesses that we might have identified, which in our view could be dealt with quickly if you experience and hear them firsthand in the meetings like this. So that's our request for the future. And we also highlighted the importance of the, we know that the parliamentary liaison officer of the department who's stationed here might give much attention to committee meetings of education committees, but we draw the attention to the department of the fact that with regard to spending patterns on the conditional grant, that's the area we assist with, and would also appreciate if whoever is responsible for liaison also becomes aware of that fact and also try his or her best to form part of our meetings so that there is that liaison from time to time with yourselves. Because some of the information that we get from here and our reports we share with our colleagues who head the education select committee on education in the NCOP in particular, so that in our oversight as we do follow up in provinces, we are able to also monitor some progress to strengthen the role of the department itself in terms of monitoring and evaluation. So that is in brief the background as to what, why we felt it a need for yourself or the minister to be here today. That's, yes, thanks. And honorable members, I do have only three apologies from Honorable Zulu, who's engaged in another meeting. As you know, he's the only member from his party, so he prioritized which meetings to attend. Honorable Mashile will only be coming back from the election mission from Lesotho. He was deployed there as an observer. And Honorable Mazosiwe, who is out of the out of town. So those are the only three apologies I have received, and one apology from MEC of Education in KZN, who has indicated that Dr. Nkosinathi Sishi will be leading the delegation from the KZN. So those are the apologies that I have received, and I would request your reflection. Honourable members, can you, do you accept the apologies?
Yes.
Thank you very much. And then I'm on item number 3 of our agenda, which is the report by the Department of Basic Education on the 3 grants, and I will then give this opportunity to the Deputy Minister to lead us into the discussion. Honourable Deputy Minister.
Honourable Chairperson and esteemed members of the National Council of Provinces and colleagues, thank you very much for the invitation, Chairperson, that you've extended to either the Minister or myself. Let me at the outset convey the apology of the Minister, who is, as we speak right now, participating in a very important event, and that is the song, the birthday song for our former President Nelson Mandela, where all the artists and various leaders are gathering in Sandton to pay tribute and homage to the former president, and certainly it would be more appropriate if the minister was there. She says that she would certainly would have been here, and I hope I'm an adequate substitute on behalf of the minister in terms of this exercise. Secondly, Chairperson, the Director General had taken ill as a result of a viral infection, and he was going to come notwithstanding his illness, and I suggested to him that he should rather stay over there, because I'm ably supported by a team of officials. We have the DDG for planning, Mr. Padiachi here. We have the CFO from the department. We have Mr. Enoch Nkize, who is responsible for the technical schools, and we have Ms. Diale, who is our in-house engineer, and we also have Mr. Dr. Alan Subban, who is responsible for the Denali schools. So we've made sure, Chairperson, that the responsible officials are here, and I'm glad to see that we have our HOD, or the Superintendent General from KZN, seated next to me, Mr. Sishi, as well as the HOD from Limpopo and the CFO. And I'm happy that they have responded to your request. Chairperson, what you're doing now is so critical and necessary, because you're dealing with issues which are central to the strategic choices that we've made as a department. For example, the promotion of mathematics and science as one of our strategic objectives for the current year. And if that doesn't function, then we don't address it adequately, we would not be able to achieve the outcomes that you set out in terms of our delivery agreement with the President, and also in terms of strategic choices that we have made. Similarly, with regard to infrastructure, it's not only about the Eastern Cape, but infrastructure countrywide, and certainly with regard to schools and mud schools, you look particularly at the Eastern Cape, and it's an important area, and therefore the monitoring that you are undertaking, as you should, in the National Council of Provinces, is so central to your task of oversight. So I am not here taking offense. I'm in fact celebrating the fact that the National Council of Provinces, through the chair, has basically found it necessary to request the executive to be part of this particular process and to address it. The third area, obviously, is the issue of technical schools. And given the importance of skills acquisition, it becomes a very, very important area. I have engaged with the officials with regard to your request, and I've indicated to them that we want an honest account of where we are. So basically, it's not a question of dressing up our challenges and masking it in ways that confuses people. If we perform, let us indicate where we perform. If we have challenges, let us indicate where the challenges are. But let the House be fully aware of the progress and the challenges in each one of the areas. In that way, there they could embrace the challenges that we face in an honest and frank way and be able to guide the process wherever necessary. I can assure you, Chairperson, that from the reports that you will receive, you would find them to be more than, it will be so frank that you would be rather surprised to say that the information is so detailed and so honest that it gives you, as honourable members, a clear indication of where we are. But I've also asked the officials, when they make the presentation, to give an indication of the movement from where we were to where we are. And if I could just, with your permission, Chairperson, highlight just a few areas, and the officials will go into the details of the report as they make their presentation. With regard to the issues of infrastructure, for example, 49 schools are in the process of being built in the Eastern Cape. Now, there were difficulties in terms of the management of that particular process. There was an engagement with the Development Bank of South Africa. There were issues in relation to contractors that were appointed who did not have the capacity. But most important in the Eastern Cape, and which people tend to overlook, is the issue of the geographical, the land terrain, the terrain itself, the earthworks that are necessary that precede the building of a school. And when one looks at the school, one looks at the size of the school, but one really pays particular attention to the enormous challenge given the landscape of the Eastern Cape with regard to earthworks. And I think the department has learned an important lesson there, that as you plan, you have to pay particular attention to that area. And for that reason, we do have an in-house civil engineer, and Ms. Diale has been wonderful in terms of providing that kind of support. What we can report to you is that there is progress in each one of them. Today we can say to you that every school's earthworks have been completed, each one of the 49, that within the next quarter you would have a report, in my estimation, of not less than 50% progress in each and every one of the units, unless there has been a transgression or unless there has been a violation of the contract itself. But based on the projection, I would imagine that the department, I would certainly invite the department to call the team back to say, look, in the next quarter, let us see where you are with regard to each school. What I've asked the department to do, Chairperson, is to list each school and indicate precisely where we are in relation to each school. I've even asked the engineer to provide photographs, if requested by the honourable members, of each and every school so that you can visually see what is happening in each one of the sites. Now, it would not form part of the presentation, but if at all any of the members, including the Honourable Chair, wishes to have sight of that, it is available to you. So what I'm saying to you, this is a transparent and responsive process with regard to infrastructure. We must also draw your attention to the fact, Chairperson, that we cannot have a situation where the ACD is focused only in one province. So for the current financial year, for example, you would have 100 unsafe schools. Although the problem is enormous in the Eastern Cape, but 50 of them would be built in the Eastern Cape, and the other 50 would be spread across the other 50 provinces. So in a sense that, you know, you have all provinces benefiting from this particular intervention, and obviously you would pay particular attention to those provinces that have the greater need. So that would deal broadly with the issues of infrastructure. And I'm just highlighting certain areas that we might have overlooked in the context of our conversation. With regard to the Dinaledi initiative, now the promotion of math, science and technology is so critical and central to the skills acquisition that we seek to achieve as a country. And to raise certain things, I've had the benefit, Chairperson, of probably the longest serving deputy minister in education in the history of our democratic dispensation, although I had a stint in justice. But I have a sense of where we were with education. You know, 5 years ago, Chairperson, we had about 27,000 of our learners doing mathematics. And Mr. Sisi is here, he was the chief examiner at the time, and he will confirm it. And we took upon ourselves to say that we're going to increase double, more than double the numbers. Today we have more than 110,000 people writing and passing mathematics. Now obviously we have challenges in terms of the quality of the pass, but in terms of participation we can celebrate the fact that as a country every learner that writes grade 12 is numerate, does either mathematics or mathematical literacy. That was not the case in the past because mathematics was regarded in many quarters as a difficult subject and they would choose history or geography or any of the other subjects. But now it is a fundamental. So every learner has to do either mathematics or mathematical literacy. So you have more than 500,000 numerate, well, varying degrees, but numerate learners in relation to that. And it was a huge task and it's a huge achievement. But given that reality, we tend to forget that to have every child doing mathematics in grade 10, in grade 11, in grade 12 means that you have to have a competent teacher in every classroom. And the human capacity within the country at the time the decision was made was just not there. That's the reality. It means that we've got to intensify and accelerate our development in terms of content knowledge. But what we can share with you, which might not have been shared, and I don't think it has been shared, is never before in the history of this country has every learner, and I'm talking particularly about democratic dispensation, because I mean we had 19 education departments in the past, and they passed it past. We now have one system. Although we have 9 provinces, the reality is in the past, you would find each province choosing a textbook that is different. So whether you're doing physical science or whether you're doing mathematics, the textbook is different. So if a child migrates from one province to the other, you find a different textbook. And occasionally, in many instances, if a child migrates from one school to another, you would have a different textbook because of the last choices. Today, for grades 10 and grades 11, we've provided a textbook for every learner, quintile 1 to 5, historically advantaged and disadvantaged schools, a math textbook and a science textbook. Now, that book, if you were to purchase it at a store, would be not less than 300 rands per textbook. So every child has that particular textbook as a resource. It's never happened before, and that textbook becomes a core textbook that can be used across the country, which means that when you do content and teacher development, you don't do it differently in different provinces. It's a uniform process because we write a uniform examination. Less than 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years ago, Mr. Sishi will tell you, we were writing a few papers that were nationally written, and most of the papers were provincially written. Today we can say that almost every paper that is being written in the grade 12 is a national examination that is set nationally. So what I'm saying is that we're setting normative standards which we were not with us just a few years ago, and that is a huge movement forward. Today we can say that when we look at Dinar Ledi as a concept promoting mathematics, science and technology, it is not what we do in grade 12, but it is what we do from grade R. Therefore we can celebrate, Chairperson, the fact that from grade R to grade 9, every learner across every quintile receives a book in literacy and numeracy. In fact, receives 2 books for literacy in a year and 2 books for numeracy. If you were to convert that into statistics, into numbers, 56 million books are delivered to each school, you know, amongst to each learner within the 25 to 26,000 schools by the Department of Education. Now, just to give you an example, if you were to open those books and put the pages alongside, you would rotate the world 7 times. That is the scope of what we are providing to our schools. It never happened before. Now, I'm not saying that that's an absolute achievement. I think the challenge now is if you've got these resources, how do you utilize the resources? Are these resources being adequately utilized both by the learner as well as the teacher? Do the teachers have the skills to augment their teaching with the literacy and numeracy textbooks? Are the books being delivered on time to schools? And if you look at the non-delivery element, you know, it works out to less than 0.02%, given the scope of what I'm saying. Now, if you look at the number of learners who are recipients, which would be certainly in excess of 8 million, and if you have 100,000 or 200,000 who have not received the textbooks, which I reported about, we tend to forget about the few, more than 7,900,000 and so many thousand that have received the textbooks. So I'm not suggesting that there are no challenges. I'm saying that there are challenges, but as we move forward year to year, we've enhanced our capacity both nationally and provincially to do that. So Mr. Shishi, as the head of department, and the SG from Limpopo would be able to tell you that what we do in the province, for example, is to ensure that they have approximately 17,000 textbooks in a warehouse to deal with issues each province of deficits. In other words, if there's a shortage, for example, you might find the figures that were given by a school at the beginning of the year or the end of the last year is 500 learners. Suddenly there's been a migration, and now they've got 550 learners. Well, how do you get the 50 textbooks? Now, rather than waiting for the national department, we say go to your district offices, and the district offices have a warehouse where they store these books and they are provided immediately. Now, these are kind of improvements that come through as a result of the experiences that we've had there. But what is important about the Dinaledi initiative is that we've done extremely well in terms of providing textbooks, because each child has a textbook, not only in math and science, but in each subject, has a calculator and an additional teacher. But for the first time this year, we have a conditional grant. And how we manage that conditional grant is very, very critical. In terms of teacher development, in terms of ensuring that quality education takes place. So when you look at the presentation, you would find an astounding contribution by the Dinaledi schools, which are in historically disadvantaged areas, both urban and rural, and basically the primary recipients of the Dinaledi initiative as African children. But you would find an extraordinary measure, more than 2,000 distinctions coming from the Dinaledi School in Math and Science, approximately about 3,000, about another 2,000 coming between 70 and 80%. But there's another reality. On the opposite side, on the other side of the coin, you have some 8 to 10,000 that are achieving between 0 and 20%. That cannot be acceptable. That cannot be acceptable. So I say, as we celebrate our victories, let's also recognize the challenges. So what do we do with that cohort of learners who are underachieving? And that becomes critical and central. I can say from my side, and Mr. Alan Subban is here, Dr. Subban is here, I will tell you that I've already requested a meeting not only with his branch, but with all the 9 provincial coordinators to find out how are you dealing with the issues of this particular grant and improving the quality of education, particularly in those schools, and where provinces are not going to perform. In other words, if, for example, they have these designated schools, and those designated schools are not performing, I will take it upon myself, and I will consult with the MEC to provide those resources to another school that is aspiring, that has better potential. Because if we don't make those interventions, we're going to have, in some instances, the mediocrity that we don't want. And I think here it's really a hands-on thing. So I said to you that I think you will be very heartened by the very comprehensive report from the official. With regard to the third element, and that's the more challenging element, if you look at the expenditure patterns in the past, Chairperson, I was as disappointed as you were and the honorable members in this House. It was just not acceptable. Technical schools are necessary for skills acquisition. They form part of the educational landscape, and yet not much was being done in terms of recapitalization and replacing old and obsolete equipment in the various schools. Now, we've had the advantage, fortunately, as a result of exposure. We had recapitalized the FET schools, and you see a huge improvement in the FET colleges as a result of the new curriculum. R2 billion was allocated for that purpose. And I can tell you, as a national department, we were able to do that not because provinces were collaborating, but because it was driven by the national department in cooperation with the provinces. We have taken a decision at the Council of Education Ministers meeting that the national department must now drive technical schools so that it could go directly to the school and say, Manir, what are your needs in that particular school? It would then collaborate with the official from the province to say, look, these are the needs, and from your conditional grant, this is what we're going to supply. Because if that doesn't happen, you're going to have the under-expenditure that you are concerned about and I am concerned about. And I can tell you that formal decision has indeed been taken, has been conveyed to the officials, and a dedicated unit is going to take place. I think what the Education Select Committee must look at is another way. What about that learner who's in a technical school who does not wish to pursue tertiary education and wants to acquire these electrical, engineering, whatever skills in that particular technical school? Should that learner have to do mathematics at the level that that learner does at grade 12? Now, there's other fundamentals. The 7 subjects required by a person who wants to go to tertiary institution, also the norm for that learner who wants to acquire the skills, go into the workplace, or become an entrepreneur? It's a conversation that has to take place. Because I'm saying that as we put these resources, we must recognize that from the many million kids, 600,000 or 550,000 that are going to write the matric, you can't suggest that every single one of them would want to go to university or university of technology. There are many who will be quite happy to acquire the skill, go directly into the workplace as a result of it, but one accreditation for it. So that conversation should take place there. Chairperson, I thought I'd just give you this kind of overview to indicate to you politically where we are. We have the esteemed members who are here. I certainly will sit and listen to the conversation, but merely suggest to our presenters that they have reports that are being distributed. They might not want to go into the detail of every column and every word, but merely to take in a very concise way the committee through the presentation so that there's more time available for interaction. I do so also because I have a particular attachment to this house and I know how valuable time is as a resource to this particular house. But thank you again, Chairperson, for the invitation that you've extended to the Ministry.
From the Department, I don't know who will start. Honourable members, I made a mistake because this was a continuation. I assumed, you know, that I did not even do introduction. So I'm going to request that as we go along, as you are given the opportunity to speak, you can start first by introducing yourself. I'm Edwin Chani, the chair of this committee. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you. My name is Alan Subin, and I'll be presenting on the Dunaledi schools. I would suggest that you refer to the hard copies because we are experiencing technical problems here. Let me say at the outset that the background in regards to Dunaledi schools project was launched in 2001. It's focused on improving quality of teaching and learning in mathematics and science, increasing number and quality of learner passes in mathematics and science at the grade 12 level. There was a reaffirmed commitment to this project in 2005, and the intention was to double learner performance in higher grade mathematics and science to 50,000 by 2008. As such, the Dunaledi School Project was established to give targeted support in raising performance, and especially amongst black learners and girl learners in these subjects in respective schools. The strategic objectives of the National Strategy for Math, Science and Technology Education was to set performance targets in all schools, to have competent teachers in every classroom in these schools, improving the language of learning and teaching, identifying and nurturing talent and potential, and cooperation with the Department of Science and Technology, partnerships with relevant stakeholders, evaluation and monitoring of math and science and technology in provinces in these schools, and introducing ICT in these schools and the use of ICT. The number of schools over the years has expanded, as is indicated in the table that is provided At present, we are sitting with 500 schools, and the breakdown for provinces is provided in the last column as per present year as well. The objectives of the grant are, as has been stated, as to raise participation in disadvantaged schools amongst disadvantaged learners in science and maths, and designed to provide a cost-effective way of channeling resources. It's a short-term approach, but using the short-term approach to expand mathematics and science in all schools in the country. If we look at on slide 7, the total number of learners writing and passing mathematics in the Nelly schools, as was indicated by the Honourable Deputy Minister, we would notice that a breakdown of passes from 0 to 10% and those up to 100%. There's a total of 1,174 learners in mathematics that is achieving between 80 and 100%. And as was indicated, the concern is in the lower levels of the range, where we have learners in large numbers achieving at below 40%. As we go forward, we would look at the strategy in changing this picture, but this is as it stands, and we felt it necessary for the committee to have the facts at hand and present it to them and look at what ways the department is looking at going forward. We have the comparison between 2009 and 2011 between the Dunleary schools and national, and that is shown in the table, where we have the national picture as well as the picture as far as Dunleary schools are concerned. In looking at 2011, we look at a total of 23%, and that is looking at 50% and above. So it does appear that the picture is not in keeping with the capital outlay, but we'll address that as we go along. Then we look at physical science in the next two tables, and I'm not going to go into the detail for the sake of time. Again, giving you the breakdown in slides 9 and 10. And the next few slides is in terms of the implementation of the grant itself and the expenditure patterns. We note that for 2011-2012, there was 70 million rand that was provided to all provinces. Again, the purpose of the grant is outlined, but in keeping with the next slide, the intention of the grant, as is outlined in the framework of the conditional grant, is to provide those resources as is shown in the slide. The allocation of funds for the 2011-2012 financial year is shown for and is provided for in terms of what has been allocated for each province, amounting to a total of 70 million rand. If we look at the provincial transfers and expenditures as of March 2012, you'll note that for all provinces except Limpopo, the total budget was transferred. The issue around Limpopo was in relation to the issue of the province being placed under Section 100B and the low expenditure pattern that prevailed in regards to this grant. One would note that the percentage of the total would stand at 89.72%, but if we look at the percentage spent of transfers, excluding the amount, the last transfer tranche to Limpopo, the expenditure would be 92.55%. At the last meeting, the honourable members requested that a report be provided for each province as to what was procured out of the transfers to each province, and that is shown in the slides, the proceeding slides, and I'm not going to go into the detail for each of those, but it's in keeping with the framework of the grant itself. If members would permit me to continue and not look at the details, but for your own perusal. Then we look at the 2012-2013 financial year. It shows the allocation for each province for this financial year, which amounts to 99,700,000. As was stated earlier, Honourable Chair and members, there were challenges with the implementation of the grant, notwithstanding the fact that this grant was only made available from April of 2011 and ending financial year March 2012. So, in essence, the transfers of tranches and the procurement that followed was for implementation in the 2012 academic year. So while we have shown the results for 2011, that may form and may be looked at as a baseline as we go forward in 2012 to look at the implementation of the grant, what has been procured as far as resources are concerned, and what effect or impact it has had in the 2012 NSC. So we do acknowledge that the mathematics and physical science has not been, in terms of performance, has not been substantial over the years. We have observed a decline in learners moving away from mathematics to mathematic literacy, which we have acknowledged and taken cognizance in terms of looking at a way forward and addressing these issues. The results from NSC has not been what is... what has been in terms of intentions, and there's also lack of capacity in provinces at the national office, which contributes to slow procurement processes. But I must also add here that the practice amongst provinces is to wait for an accumulation of the funds so that they can procure for the entire academic year. The recommendations going forward, we're saying that the Dinaledi Schools Conditional Grant must assist feeder schools around those particular schools to increase the supply of learners taking mathematics in the system. It is intended to expand to secondary schools in proximity of identified Dinaledi schools, where we allow those schools to make use of the resources of Dinaledi schools. We want provinces to ensure that Dinaledi schools achieve 60% of mathematics and 40% of learners taking mathematics literacy. We are looking at capacitating Dinaledi schools and technical schools in developing a single special unit at the national office that will have closer monitoring and evaluation of these schools. We want to also note, as has been stated, that the grant is in its first year of implementation and that the resources that have been procured, we will see the desired, we hope to see the desired results in the 2012 NSC examinations. We have taken note of the aspects with regards to enrollment and learner performance. We accept that we will, as we go forward, look at the following: expansion of schools taking mathematics and physical science beyond Dinaledi schools. We want to look at a sustainability program in Dinaledi schools and therefore bring on more schools into the Dinaledi project. Expansion of grades through the grant itself by providing support to grades 8 and 9 as well, so that learners who are taking, at least the learners will be encouraged to take mathematics in grades 10 as they go into those grades. Increase of enrollment for learners taking mathematics and science. We want all Dinaledi schools to offer only mathematics and physical science as subjects. We want to support girl learners in these schools through motivational talks to encourage them to take mathematics and physical science as subjects. We hope to improve and increase connectivity in these schools and support for mathematics and physical science. We looking at the 268 Dinaledi schools that have connection already, but to add another 132 schools through the Telkom network so that we can provide necessary resources and support to both teachers and learners in mathematics and science. Dinaledi schools will be provided with digitized content that allows for interactive teaching, learning, and evaluation. At present, we have an example of this in the Western Cape with the format of telematic teaching for mathematics and science to support these learners. Neighboring schools to be encouraged to utilize facilities at Dinaledi schools to increase knowledge and of content and understanding of content, and so to increase the number of learners taking mathematics and science and providing all the necessary support required. Honorable Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable members, that was on the Dinaledi School grant. I would request, with your permission, that we take all three reports from National Department and then we can interact with the report thereafter. We can take the next report. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister. I'm going to present, my name is Perry Padiachi, DDG Planning Information Assessment. I'm going to present on the infrastructure backlog grant. And just to kick off with a background, that the grant is there's two purposes for the grant. It's to cover the entire schools that are inappropriate in entirety, as well as to look at the issue of basic services of water, sanitation, electricity to schools which have not had. The grant is also known as the Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative, in short, ACD. Slide number 4, basically we are showing what was set out as the targets for the grant over the MTF from 2011 to 2014, and covering 496 inappropriate schools, and then a breakdown of the water, the basic services. And in the allocation, in total, 8.2 billion was allocated, 700 million in the first year, 2.3 billion in the 2012-13, and the remainder being 5.1 billion in 2013-14. In the 2011-12 year, the budget was split into 420 million for the 15 inappropriate schools and 280 for basic services. And in the slide number 6 is basically the targets that were then broken down in terms of what would be looked at in 2011-12. 50 inappropriate schools in the Eastern Cape only, and the other provinces will be addressed in other years. Then electricity, sanitation, and water were 190, 235, and 173 after the scoping and assessment exercise. So in terms of the implementation for 2011-12, our implementing agents for the inappropriate schools in the Eastern Cape was the DBSA. We found that one of the schools was already being implemented by the Eastern Cape Department, and it was then removed and that will be handled by the provincial department. Mvula Trust was dealing with water and sanitation in Limpopo and Eastern Cape, and Eskom was dealing with electrification in Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. And in the four provinces of Free State, Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape, we appointed these provinces as the implementing agents in their jurisdiction. And In terms of our financial commitments for the year in terms of the inappropriate schools, the costing came to $841 million, which included the professional fees and other management fees and costs included in that 841, and $217.3 million was with basic services. This was approximately $1.058 billion, which for the 2011 year we had committed contractually. Now the expenditure as at 31st March, in this slide number 10, we have broken it down in terms of 420 for the inappropriate and then each of the sanitation, water and electricity in terms of their individual budget that we had set aside. And expenditure at 31 March was $59.6 million, with a remainder of $640 million not spent but committed. And total spending was 8.5 at the end of the financial year. In the following slide, we look at expenditure now at as at the 23rd of May 2012. At 31st March, we were at 59.6, and since then, we made another $42.4 million of payments after verification and having invoices verified as well as evidence that their building has been completed. We are now standing at 102.1 million. So expenditure has moved to 14.6 million. And as the Deputy Minister has indicated, there has been this is a shift towards progress in terms of the buildings. Now, just going back to some of the challenges with this program with regard to the 49 schools, in procuring the DBSA, it took longer. Negotiations that started in April 2011, but there were delays with the signing of the Memorandum of Agreement, and DBSA had to get approval from the Minister of Finance, and only in June 13th, the DBE had signed the agreement, and in July, the DBSA had signed. We received the implementation plan in August, and then DBSA had the plan to use professional service providers to undertake scoping, and this process was then delayed due to a conflict of interest in companies that were bidding for the work. DBSA followed another process to appoint the PSPs, and this was then concluded on the 15th of September, and then that went out to tender in October. The idea was to a strategy being used to procure contractors in terms of pre-qualifying them, and from this pool you then use the pre-qualified contractors. This process was also halted to a dispute with contractors from the Eastern Cape who were requiring that the grading of 7GB be reduced to 6GB. Once that was resolved, then the process continued in October, and then we had two packages of 28 schools put out as well as 22. And the scoping was also a process where we had to deal with some issues. But the tendered amounts then came in the first batch of 28, it was over $711 million and close to $600 million for the second. Then there was the issue was of negotiating that price down, and referring to the earlier slide, you'll see that the costing has come down to about $800 million. The sites were only handed over to the contractors in January of this year, and we had reduced the price to $675 million. That was excluding the professional services. Now, in these slides from slide 15, the 49 schools are listed in terms of each contractor. And on this slide, the contractor is Armstrong with the contract number, and Armstrong has 12 schools. And in these 12 schools, you have the percentage breakdown. There's a school with 32.1%, which is the best in terms of this contractor. But overall, the contractor is just under 12%. Karen Kula is another contractor who has been given a package of 9 schools, and you'll see that they're at 14%. SSI Mafuri, with 6 schools, is at 11. This contractor had problems of delays when they tried to procure labor from the community, but found that there was no one available, and this led to a setback in terms of their time frames, so they are in a process of catch-up. TBP with 6 schools is at 9.2%. Trendcon with 5 schools is at 17.4%. And then there are 11 schools with individual contractors. And on the next slide, you'll see Dakele Primary at 35.7. Overall, our professionals have estimated that progress is under 15%. And this slide just summarizes that, that the program is behind schedule between 16 and 77 days, and you have 16 schools under 10%, 24 schools between 10 and 20, and 6 at 20 to 30, and 3 at above 30%. Some of the contractors had been placed on notice and had to submit recovery plans, and we've put in stringent monitoring with both the contractors and the DBSA in order to ensure that steps are taken to ensure progress. One of the contractors' processes are in place to deal with termination. As I indicated earlier, the obtaining skilled laborers has been a challenge, but in other instances, in some in one particular school, that entire village has been utilized in terms of absorbing all the people who can do work have been taken up, and the contractor has to look for people from outside that village. The supply of materials is still remains a risk factor. With regard to the basic services in Limpopo, 32 of the 40 sanitation projects have basically been completed. 32 of the 38 water projects have been completed. In Eastern Cape, 49 of the 55 sanitation have achieved practical completion. And then with regard to water, 82 of the 84 schools have received, have been provided with the tanks. 12 of 38 schools were connected to the municipal bulk supply. With regard to the boreholes, the 49 that were identified, they have not been completed. KZN was the implementing agent. They had 88 schools. 5 were found to be already addressed, so they were left with 83. 28 of those have been completed. 17 of them are between 60 and 90%, and then we had 38 projects that were handed over at the end of the financial year in March and April. So they are under 20% progress in that regard. Western Cape, in terms of the 7 schools for electrification, 21 for sanitation, and 3 for water, had completed all the projects. The same with Gauteng. We had 7 for sanitation and 2 for electrification. They had completed it by the end of the financial year. The Free State, in terms of their targets, they completed 11 in sanitation and 11 in water and 22 in electrification. There were still a few projects that still were in construction. The Northern Cape had 6 water projects and 16 sanitation. They are still in construction. Now, most of the projects were completed by the end of the fourth quarter. Some of the delays in Limpopo were due to work stoppage due to non-payment because there was a change in the scope and that had to be verified, but payments have been processed and completion of the remaining projects is expected by the end of this month. There were delays in the Eastern Cape regarding manufacturing of some materials. The example given here is urinals. There was only one supplier that manufactured this in terms of the quality that we specified, and there were large orders in that regard. The Eastern Cape Mbula Trust had started late in terms of some of looking at alternative water sources other than rainwater harvesting. With electrification, Eskom had only been able to complete 18 of the 100 of the projects that were given to them. But they have indicated that they will complete the remaining 125 by September 2012. But the main reason for the delays was the late conclusion of the Memorandum of Agreement, and they had also requested an advance payment. So there are some risks identified in terms of electrification in the Eastern Cape with regard to the shortage of bush clearing teams, and in one school, indigenous forest is in the way of it being connected. With the 2012-13 plans, table on page 32, the Deputy Minister has indicated 100 inappropriate schools, 50 for the Eastern Cape, and it's spread amongst the other 8 provinces, with 20 in the Free State, 14 in the Western Cape, and the others have had, after verification, these have been identified, which are entirely inappropriate. And then we have, in moving to the last slide, that we're looking at 692 for electrification, 453 for sanitation, 928 for water, and 50 specialist rooms. The scoping for these excluding the specialist classrooms have been completed with the cost estimations. We are finalizing the specialist rooms and to indicate to the members of the committee, KUKA, IDT, and the Department of Public Works in the Eastern Cape have been appointed for the implementation of the 50 schools. We put out a tender doc bulletin for a framework agreement for implementing agents, built environment specialists, and contractors, and briefing sessions were just held in the last week. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. The last report. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We'll just go through the hard copy since we've got some technical problems here. So, my name is Enoch Mchize. I'm from DBT. I'm responsible for Technical High School's conditional grant. Honorable Chair, the previous meeting, there was a request from the House that we present in a certain format, and we've tried to do that. We've tried to give as much details as possible, and we've also included answers to certain specific questions that the House asked. So in my presentation, at the end, there is the portion of the answers. I'm not sure if would you like me to go through the whole presentation, including the answers to the previous meeting's question, or I can just stop at the presentation only and then leave the answers to the questions at the presentation? Okay, I will do so. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The first slide that we've got now, it just gives you the background to the conditional grant. The conditional grant started in 2010-2011. It's now in its third year. And its purpose, we're trying to uplift the technical skills that are solely required by the country, especially in terms of artisans. And we've got four outputs for the grant that we've put forward. And those four outputs are to build new workshops and to refurbish or redesign old workshops, to buy and install new equipment, and to train and upskill the teachers which are involved within the four subjects of the technology field.
What we've got there, then we've just looked at what are those subjects, and as already the Deputy Minister has indicated, what we're intending to do. We've got three streams that we would like the schooling education field to play in. At the moment, we're looking forward to having our learners having the first option being to go directly to the world of work once they complete grade 12. And the second one is to have an option of going through to further and higher education. And the third one is to get self-employment. And that's why then we're looking at this grant as being one of the vehicles that will be able to assist us in getting those three objectives. And at the moment, we've got 960 public secondary schools which offer one or more of the technology subjects. And those subjects, we're talking about electrical technology, mechanical technology, engineering, graphics and design, and civil technology. And what we've done then, we've just chosen 200 out of the 960 of those schools that we are currently recapitalizing. And the next slide just gives you the profile of the 200 schools that we've selected. It gives you per province how many schools we've selected. It gives you the average number of subjects which are provided per province. It gives you the number of learners enrolled at those 200 schools between grade 10 and 12. And it also gives you the number of learners enrolled only for the four subjects now. So you see the number reduces from 181 to 68,000. And it also gives you the number of teachers which are involved in teaching the subjects, which is 2,749. And then it gives you what we intend to do with the available resources that we have. We are looking at building new workshops, the total being 118. And it gives you the per province, how many we're intending to do. And it also gives you the number of workshops which we prepare to refurbish. It's 266 for the whole country. And it also gives you the number of teachers which we've identified for training. In this case, we have identified that each and every teacher that is involved in that four subjects should get some kind of training at the end of this whole project. And we also looked at the number of workshops, not the number of schools. We currently have a problem that when provinces report, they give us the number of schools that are receiving equipment and tools and machinery. We're looking at the number of workshops which are receiving the equipment. Our total target is 663. And we've got the funding there. What you'd notice there is that in the first year we had 80 million, and the 80 million in the next year, it shoots from 80 to 200, and we also had an adjusted budget of 10.5 for the rollovers for three provinces, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga, and the total was then 210 million for 2011. And during the budget review in 2011, the budget was revised, and it was revised downwards. And this just gives you the picture of in which field, in terms of the goals of the department, this grant is going to assist. It just gives you those three goals of the department that we're trying to assist in terms of achieving our goals. It also gives you which outputs out of the grant assist in each goal. And the next slide gives you the performance, and it gives you in two financial periods. The first being 2010-2011, the second being 2011-2010, and it gives you the annual allocation, gives you the amount transferred to the provinces, and it gives you the amount spent, which is the actual payment. And it also gives you the percentage spent on total allocations. You'd notice at the bottom there that In 2010, we spent 75% of the total amount that we had, which was 80 million. And in 2011, we spent 72. So there was a decline of 3% in terms of expenditure. But you would see when we go further on how this expenditure compares to the outputs. Then the next slide gives you the details. It gives you the annual allocation, it gives you the amount transferred, but what's important in this one, it also gives you the amount committed as at the end of the financial period. And with the commitment, we would notice that because we're looking at cash payments, which are our actual payments, but we also have another portion when it comes to infrastructure projects, which are the retention amounts. So your actual payments then would be a bit reduced as at the end of the financial period, because there would be money not yet paid because of those retention amounts. And in other instances, it would be the pace at which the contractors have finished the work or the amount that has already been committed into the contract with the contractor. So with this one then, we're looking at if we consider all the amounts, including those that are committed, we'll be sitting at 92% in terms of our expenditure for 2011-2012. And we also looked at the available amount which would be able to cover the commitments. We've got 58 million, whereas the commitments amount to 42 million. So we've got a 16 million difference, which at this point in time, based on our on the records that we'll be getting, whether it goes down or up, we would see if this is the amount that will be surrendered to the National Revenue Fund. And these are just the analysis of the information that I've already went through. It just gives us the decline of 3% compared to the previous year. It also gives us the overall expenditure, which I've already indicated, of 92% if we consider the commitments and those amounts that we haven't paid in terms of our accruals and so on. And it also gives us the provinces that have recorded under expenditure lower than the national average of 70%, which is Gauteng sitting at 35%, Limpopo at 35%, and Northwest at 45%. And by the way, Limpopo was also part of those three provinces which did not perform well in 2010. So it's coming back for the second time, which is one concern that we've got. But probably we already know what are the commitments of the department in that regard. And we have also put through the slide where I record the highest expenditure per province, which at the moment is the Eastern Cape. The Eastern Cape was part of those underperforming provinces in 2010, and now it has moved towards successful performance at 86%, Free State at 100%, KwaZulu-Natal at 91%, Mpumalanga at 101% over expenditure, and Northern Cape at 102%, that's over expenditure, and Western Cape at 100%. And we would note that where we look at these provinces, there is one aspect that we also look as part of our analysis. It's whether a province transfers funds directly to a school or it does the procurement and payments at central, at a provincial level. And with this, we've got around three of these provinces are transferring funds to schools, and those are the Free State, it's the Western Cape and the Northern Cape. And what we've also noted is that in that regard, where we've got provinces transferring directly to schools, performance seems to be more around your 90% in terms of expenditure. But then we also look at the aspect of, is that compared with the delivery at schooling level? Because it should not be just transfer. It should be transfer and payments and an output. And in this case, we're monitoring that, and we've noticed that there are progress and fruits can be bred on that. And we've also given a detailed slide on the actual performance according to the outputs, which was a request that was made in our previous presentation. We've put it according to provinces, and we've put it according to the outputs. You'll remember that we've got only four outputs. And what we would notice here, you'd see that one example would be the Eastern Cape. It projected to build two new workshops, and the actual is zero. In that regard, it means they still under construction. Where there is a zero, it's an indication that as at 31st March, there was no handover of that site back to the school. So therefore, we record it as zero. It means it has not been completed. And you'd notice that in cases where you have refurbishment of old workshops, progress has been seen in that regard. And when we compare the two outputs between the refurbishment and the building, we can notice that the time taken to prepare, to plan for the building of new workshops takes longer, and the buildings also will take longer. So our planning processes need to change in that regard. And we're also looking at that to ensure that we do not continue to have these handovers at the other financial period. It should be during that financial period. So what we can notice in this one is that our final outputs, we were planning to have new workshops, 42 of them. We've achieved 23. Refurbishment of workshops, we are planning to have 247. We've completed 198. And supply of equipment to workshops, we're planning to have 215 workshops supplied. We've got 174. And in terms of teacher training, we planned to have 588, and we completed with 554. And the most completed output in this regard, because of numbers, will be teacher training, followed by the supply of equipment, and the last one would be the building of new workshops. The next slide just gives us the comparison between the two financial periods, 2010 and 2011. In 2010, we planned to have 731 outputs, and we only completed 516. We were sitting at 71% in terms of our performance. And in the previous financial period, we're sitting at 87%. We completed 949, where we projected 1,092. So the increase was 16% in terms of outputs. And the analysis in that regard is that one would be definitely the Eastern Cape, which has indicated some progress compared to the previous financial year, which is 2010. They've completed around 87% of their outputs. However, we've noted that they could not complete the major output, which is the building of new workshops. And the other provinces where we've got 100% performance, we've got Free State, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Western Cape, and in terms of the Western Cape, they've got 103% in terms of their outputs because of two additional teachers which were trained, which it's quite good. But what we've also looked at is that the number of teachers that have been trained, the numbers keeps on changing because of your transfers from one province to the other, the additional teachers that are being put, then the numbers most of the times tend to differ from the numbers that we have in the business plan, and they go up. But what we've planned that in most cases we do train all of them at that particular financial period. And what we've also noticed is the performance of Gauteng, which has gone down drastically. And we've also noticed that Limpopo in Northern Cape has the highest number of outputs, with Limpopo having the lowest expenditure in this case. And what we've got as an explanation from Limpopo is that some of their infrastructure expenditure is not paid directly from the grant. It's paid directly from the infrastructure chief directorate budget. Then that creates a problem, because when financial year end comes and there is no vireament that has been done, then it means our records indicate that we did not spend the budget for the grant. Whereas when we go for monitoring, we do see that there are activities happening. So we are trying to solve that with the province, and we will try to, it has happened for the second time now. So we would see how far we take it. Then some additional analysis, it's just the following provinces recorded over expenditure. In Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, and in this case we had a question in our in the last sitting of why there would be deviations, and these deviations why should be provided for by the provincial equitable share. And we will get the answer once we go through our answers to the questions. And we've also indicated the financial commitments of 42 million. And we've also indicated the outputs which are completed in terms of order, which was supply teacher training at 94%, supply of equipment at 81%, and refurbishment of workshops at 80%, and the least completed, which is new workshops at 55%. So we can see then that despite the decline of 3%, in expenditure, the increase in outputs have been met at 87%. So we are quite convinced that we're making some inroads in terms of what we're trying to achieve. And what we've also looked at, we try to compare, as much as the grant is still new, we try to compare with what has been happening in terms of our learner participation and pass rate. And what we've noticed is that I think just for the houses to notice, the technical subjects for a learner to take them, they are required by the subject choices to take math and science, which then becomes a challenge that once they pass this side, we would have to ensure that the other side also it's strengthened. That is why we have Dinner Lady on the other side, then we've got technical schools. But what we've noticed just at a glance is that the performance on its own for the four technology subjects or technical subjects, it's around 90%, which is quite good. And we are happy that that is it's still continuing. Even when we compare with the previous years, we have noticed that it has been kept, maintained at that level. However, we've got one challenge, is the decline in number of learners on an annual basis. So far, we've lost between 2008 and 2011, we've lost around 10% of our learners. And fortunately, we can safely say that we're not losing them out of the system. They are going to other subjects, because of the subject choices, the combination, and also because of the amount of work that has been incorporated into the new NCS for the technology subject. So that's why then we've got a review of the three subjects to see how we can try to bring them to par. So when we look then, we've just put in some improvement measures for only the retention, just to retain them in the system and to ensure that we maintain the pass rate at 90% and to ensure that we attract more learners into this subject, since we have incorporated so much funding into the sector. And on your left-hand side, you'd notice that we've just looked at some of the reasons why these learners are being lost into the system. And we've on your right-hand side, we've just put in what we are trying to put in place. What is so important at the moment, I think, is just the impact of the grant in ensuring that we still retain the learners and the review that we've got at the moment of the subjects. At the moment, we're looking at reviewing the three technology subjects. We're looking at introducing specialization, and we're looking at introducing two new subjects, which is technical mathematics and technical science. And those we're looking at, they would be in a position as subject combinations, would be in a position to directly link with the technical subjects as much as your math and science does link, but has more requirements than what the learners are actually doing at the moment. And what we've also looked at is just the specific challenges for the implementation of the grant in the last financial period. We've just also indicated the affected provinces in this regard and what we're trying to do with that. But what one would look at is the performance of KwaZulu-Natal, which started a bit late in the year. The business plan of the province was approved very late in August. However, the performance of the province in terms of the outputs and the expenditure is looking quite good. However, we've noted that. And the other issue was the Eastern Cape. We've noted that the Eastern Cape, in some instances, does not have capacity in delivering the project. However, they continue to project more than any other province in terms of the outputs that they want to achieve, which then gives us a problem in terms of how do we get the implementation on the ground to start moving. And we are quite happy now that we've got an implementing agency, which is KUGA, which is delivering all the infrastructure projects for the Eastern Cape. And work is continuing, will be completed in August of this year. And that is one aspect. And in terms of our meeting the requirements of the Act, which we function under, we've just noted some of the issues that we've got here in terms of especially the reports from provinces. We've been putting it forward to them that the data that we usually get, it's not verifiable and it's not in order, and some of the reports are not signed by the HODs, so that also gives us problems. But in terms of meeting other conditions of the Division of Revenue Act, we were able to meet all those. And just in conclusion is that you would note that we were having 80 million as our budget for 2010, and it moved from 80 to 200 million. And that assisted us to increase our outputs, and we were able to increase the outputs and achieve those outputs in terms of achieving the 87% on output level. And we have noted the decline in expenditure, and we are looking at how to assist provinces in spending at a level of above 90% when we're not taking the retention amounts and other accruals that will be there. And what then we're looking at is we have noted that at most provinces, the systems, the operational systems have matured compared to 2010. They now understand the system, they now understand the processes, and that assists the whole process of delivering the services that we want to deliver. And as it has already been indicated, the process of establishing a unit that will combine the two conditional grants and deliver at schooling level has already started, and I'll thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable members, that is the reports, very comprehensive reports from the department as we requested. And I think now I will allow time for questions. And may I request, because I think these are consolidated reports reflecting on all provinces. I'm going to request the two provinces that are here. When I give you the opportunity, you must just go straight to the spending slides. And then you can touch on areas that you feel that they were not adequately covered by the department, because this is a consolidated report of all provinces and it has covered some of the issues that are contained in your report so that we avoid repetition and save time. I'm just telling you in advance so that when I call you later, you just go straight to those slides. I recognize Honorable Makubela, Honorable Dibier, Honorable Liz, and Honorable Muntiti in that order. And Honorable members, raise your questions to all three presentations. There won't be second bites because of time. Honorable Makubela.
Thanks, Chairperson. first of all, I would like to commend the minister in which he makes an overview of this. This shows that the minister is passionate to his job. But my question is, since the minister is so, he shows that interest and passion, what the minister is going to do in order to rectify this? Because on the political side, we can see that the effort is there. The ministers want to work, but the administrators are the ones who put some brakes. What is the minister going to do about this? Okay, I'm getting to the Naledi. Now, let me start with the infrastructure. There's only one question there. From these schools which you are having, the med schools, the Naledi schools, if ESCOM is not providing electricity, have you ever thought about the acquiring of generators in order to assist you in getting the computer running? Let me get to the Naledi. I don't believe that it's only Mpumalanga who have said that, no, they're having a problem about the math teachers. And they have went to UNISA to ask these people to come and assist them. If I may ask, in all the provinces, how many teachers will you say we are having? So many teachers, very good in math, and they can, math and science, I mean to say, and they can teach effectively. As the minister has said, all right, the mission is very important thing, that 110 math student wrote an examination, but the challenges was there in the passing of the subject. Not there, but the passing is a problem. Then how many teachers do we have in all the provinces who we can say that this we can produce them for competition in other countries? We have heard about, is it Mbilwi or is it Mbini school in Limpopo? Mbilwi. Have we ever went there and conduct a research to see why are those learners are so disciplined in listening to their teachers? You will answer when it comes. Okay. Since we're having a challenge on math teachers, do we believe in the skill retention? If so, how many teachers did you retain who are doing math, or called back to do that special subject, or conducting a workshop, tapping the CRIM skill from these people. I think, Chairperson, thank you very much. I only had this. The other one, the department was so intelligent to write all the responses at the back. I wanted to go back. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dibia.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Deputy Minister and his full team for this comprehensive presentation. Just in general, I want to pass on a message from my province, the Northern Cape, regarding CAPS. It's a high quality, and it comes from teachers. My wife's a teacher, so I move in that fraternity as well, at school, during functions, etc., and other meetings. What action plan does the department have to recruit grade 12s to go and study as a teacher in the subjects of science and mathematics? Linked to that, seeing that there will be teachers that's going to retire, the tempo of retiring, the tally of teachers going out of the system, being replaced by new ones coming in, because we must look to sustain the whole system. And then lastly, Honorable Chairperson, this year I visit the schools in my constituency. I've got 15 three times a year. The whole question of the textbooks. You will have to review the system of distribution, because this worked this year in the Northern Cape. It didn't work. The workbooks, the workbooker. I was still doing my last school visits middle February, and they were still waiting. Specific case primary school is near Garries on the route to Springbok. I engaged with the MEC Chikela, because my reports go straight to her regarding the school. So there was a bit of a hiccup, but it seems to me there are measures to correct it. But I'm just bringing the message over to you as a Deputy Minister, because it's the first opportunity that we have to engage in 2012 with the Department of Education. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if it's just because I've got a headache, but the volume of our speaker system seems incredibly large today. I'll stay away from the microphone so I don't deafen everyone who's listening. Mr. Chairman, thank you to the department for their presentation. At the last presentation, we raised concerns about the variance in figures between National Treasury and the department. And we still have these variations in today's presentations. So I'm not sure what's happened. The budget figures on the technical secondary schools recap grants, $215.9 million is the figure for National Treasury, and $210.5 million is the DBE's figure. There's the one that does balance, I think, I forget which one it is. There's one of the three that balances, but the other one doesn't balance either. So the school's infrastructure backlogs grant, National Treasury haven't given us a table, but they claim a figure of $839,000 spent, and I think your figure is $59,000. Yeah, so, you know, I'm not sure why we're not getting these things to agree. But nevertheless, those are just figures. Mr. Chairman, the first program, I know I'm fairly ancient and got grey hair, but I get very concerned when we put a table titled passing and then put the number of kids who get less than 20% as if that's a pass. No, it's not. I indicate that, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to get into one-on-one. I accept that it's a concern of the department. I'm just
concerned about the impression it gives. When one opens the table headed pass rates or something, I can't remember the figure, and actually see thousands of kids below 50% on a table called passing, enrolling and passing. I just think it sends the wrong message out, Mr. Chairman, that you can, you know, that you can call those a passing. They actually failed, and they're failures. I mean, that's what I suppose puts me in the dark ages with regard to education. But it really is, I accept that the department's concerned about the low marks achieved by some pupils. Mr. Chairman, on that one, there's a column called national, and then there's a column. What does national mean? I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a bit because we've had a lot to deal with this morning, and we haven't had time to look at these beforehand. Let me just see if I can find it for you. I think it was on the first. It was the first presentation. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do I need to go further? I just don't understand what the meaning of national is. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong one here. The column, there's a percentage of national, and then, do you know what I'm talking about? Can you, well, Mr. Chairman, if I find it later, I'll come back to it. You know what you're talking about. Okay. Okay, thanks very much. But the department minister's indicated in this. There's a recommendation that feeder schools should be assisted. Exactly how would that work? I'd be interested in that. A CD project. Okay, the DVSA is the implementing agent. How does the CSIR fit into that whole program? Is that where, you know, there's a reference to professional fees and consulting fees, so perhaps that's it. Then in the first year there were 50 schools in the Eastern Cape, and then the next year there's another 50 in the Eastern Cape, but plus other provinces. It's a three-year program, I think. What's the third year numbering going to be like? Now I'm curious a little bit there. My information was that the competent contractors was very limited here. Now I've obviously got the wrong end of the stick, because you've given us a very comprehensive list of contractors and how many schools they've each got and so on. Maybe you can help me. I understood there were only two contractors in the country who could deal with this, but maybe it's some other project, and perhaps you can clarify, or if you don't know what I'm talking about, tell me I'm talking nonsense, I'm sure, which I probably am, Mr. Chairman. I do that frequently, despite trying hard not to. Chairman, let's leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I also welcome the briefing that we received from the minister and his team. Yeah, it was indeed quite comprehensive. Chairperson, I just want to tease the minister on a number of questions here. On the school's infrastructure backlog, some of the schools are referred to as inappropriate. I suppose that is with respect to the delivery of services, electricity, water, and so on. No, okay. My question with respect to that issue is, how much of the schools are still a challenge with respect to schools under trees and mud schools. And how are we doing in that respect in order to attend to that particular delivery? Now, just to throw in this one, Chairperson, a state construction company to assist with construction, most in particular, of infrastructure in education and in other spheres. State construction company. my question, Chairperson, on the technical secondary schools recapitalization framework. It's on page 6. Page 6 speaks to the problems that my province is having, Gauteng. Now, Gauteng here is portrayed as one of the worst performing provinces in terms of the delivery of outputs. Now, there has been a withholding of payment to the suppliers. Now, I just want to understand the reasons for that, because I have to discuss these issues with Gauteng. And then in page 8, again, there are a number of irregularities with respect to Gauteng again. Firstly, on the development and approval of tenders. And then secondly, on monitoring and collection of data, which impacts on underperformance. And then thirdly, on the failure to consult with other departments. What are these problems? What does Gauteng, what did Gauteng say to the ministry about these issues? The other issue, Chairperson, is just about the national standards for the pass rate. The 30% national standard acceptable as a pass. I just want to find out from the minister if that is not a little bit low. Is it not possible to take the bar probably up to 40%? What are the reasons for the 60%? And just the enrollment, again, generally of enrollment and performance of boy and girls, child in both the technical and in both the technical colleges. But what are their performance like? If that has been captured, if not, it's okay. Through you, Chairperson, again, just to remind us about the quintiles, the Naledi schools, to which quintile do they belong? Thank you.
Thanks very much for the input thus far. But may I be very controversial? As we sit here right now, kids are on the rampage banning schools in the Eastern Cape. Okay, I understand DBSA has been given the task in actually, you know, helping with the backlog of building schools, and specifically Eastern Cape is the worst one. What other strategies are in place to ensure that we don't end up with dead bodies in those mud schools, because they are falling apart?
Thank you, Honorable Memela. Just a few questions from myself, Honorable Minister, and the team. Under the Naledi grant, I'm just quite concerned that the performance there is still not up to scratch, and one appreciates the improvements. But and specific references to Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Northwest in terms of them performing below 50% overall in both maths and science. But my question is, if you compare from 2009 to 2011, you find that the number in from 2009 went up in 2010, but then took a dive in 2011 in both the enrollment as well as the passing rate. So I'll be much more interested to get to know as to what could be the reason in that regard, and what is it that the department is doing to ensure that KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga pick up their socks in terms of the rolling out of equipment and the kids, because there seems to be lagging behind. And then I would also appreciate if the department can clarify slide number 7 and slide number 9 so that we avoid misinterpretation of that slide. The slide that talks to the number of learners writing and passing mathematics in the Naledi schools, and the slide that talks, because if 30% is regarded as the passing rate, surely anything between 0 and 29, it cannot be said to be a passing. But those slides can be interpreted as saying that. Hence, I would appreciate an explanation of that slide so that we clear any misinterpretation. Under school infrastructure bedrock grant, the expenditure level remain a concern as at the end of the financial year, it was 8.5% of the total budget, as reported here. Now, I would want to know, if you go to slide number 10, I'm interested to know if slide number 10 and 11, if, because I did not hear the presenter, if you look at slide number 10, those are the figures for 2011-12. But then if you go to slide number 11, that slide speaks to 2011-12 and 12-13. But then you still find the same figures. I would have expected that if there's been rollover approved, I would assume there's been a rollover, but would want your confirmation of all the unspent monies to this financial year. Then the slide number 11, because it's combined the two, the figures there should be different if they take into consideration 2012-2013 allocations. Otherwise, the way it is, it's like the entire amount is being rolled over, and what is being budgeted for 2012-13 is not going to be touched at all. You're still going to exhaust the expenditure first on that. I would need clarity there, because it speaks of expenditures at the end of 31st of March, and then it immediately goes to expenditure as 23rd of May 2012, which is now the period for the current financial year. And then quickly to technical secondary school recap grant, KZN and Limpopo again, as well as Northwest, still perform below 50% of the overall, and that decline of 3% from what you were last year. One would have expected a bit of improvement instead of a decline in expenditure overall, but whilst we understand some of the reasons, but I'll be more interested to know as to what is the, whether there are plans to correct the situation in KZN, Limpopo and Northwest in terms of their expenditure patterns. And lastly, the Chair, I think Gauteng has been covered by Honourable Muntis. My last question on that would be on Limpopo. You are saying Limpopo's account for those under expenditure under that grant is because of them having charged that from the provincial infrastructure budget. Now, having identified that, what is the situation? Are they going to be reimbursed from the grant for what they have spent back into the provincial equitable share? Or what is the situation with regard to Limpopo? Or I'm sure my question is quite clear. Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, and thank you very much to the honourable members for the very important questions that they've raised. Interestingly enough, some of the questions that they've raised I've also raised with the department when I saw the presentations, for example, and perhaps just to right at the outset to deal with the issue raised by Mr. Lewis as well as the chair. I inquired how could 0 to 10% be regarded as a pass mark, because that's what the slide says. It's a typographical error. If you look at the end result, it's 54%. So if 0 to 10% was a pass mark, then the end result would have been 100%. But because it's a typographical error, it's been inserted quite incorrectly, but the slides will be changed. So that's just really a typo error more than a real reflection of the actual pass rate. Chairperson, let me try to deal to the best of my ability with the issues that have been raised, and obviously the department would assist me wherever there are gaps. Mr. Makubela, thank you for your various questions. With regard to the practical side, and the practical side means to what extent you are not responsible for the administration. You don't enter into contracts. The DG deals with those matters, the DDGs and other officials who have been delegated with the responsibility. What we do now, and the DDG is here, he will tell you that we meet every Monday. There is a meeting with the senior management called the Minister's Management Meeting, where we want a report, amongst others, on infrastructure. Because it's a great concern. Yesterday there was a meeting with the Minister around the same particular issue. And the concern raised about expenditure, Chair, by yourself, is the same concern that we share. And we basically looked at the matter much more deeply, to say to what extent can we make sure that the acceleration takes place. And I think what you're beginning to see now, and that's why it's important that we have Ms. Diale here, you would see in the past 2 months, for example, a huge and dramatic change. We can say now very comfortably and confidently, for example, in terms of the Eastern Cape 49 schools, the earthworks have been done. Our foundations are being set out. Some of them are in progress. But I say within the next 2 months, I can't see the performance being less than 50% in terms of expenditure, because the preliminary work has to be done. Now, it would have been going on the way it does if we did not put the pressure both on DBSA as well as our Department of Basic Education. And my colleagues will tell you that it is not the nicest meeting for them to attend. We've become very unpopular, the Minister and I, as a result of what we express in those particular meetings, although they might be internal by nature, but the frustrations that you have, because it's our children to whom we have to deliver. So on the practical side, it's really, we look at the matter much more closely. We don't just wait for an annual report or a quarterly report. We do so almost on a weekly basis. And with regard to infrastructure, it is going to be happening on a weekly basis. In addition, with regard to the Eastern Cape and Limpopo in particular, where there are interventions, in the Eastern Cape, the Deputy Minister of Basic Education is in charge of a team of deputy ministers. There are five of us, including finance, public service and administration, justice and constitutional development, and higher education and training, where Cabinet has assigned the responsibility of oversight in relation to the implementation of Section 101B to the deputy ministers. So, for example, in December, we were there, spent 2 days engaging with all officials, provided a report with recommendations. These have been accepted by Cabinet and have been accepted by the Eastern Cape government. It is our task to see that those things are happening. And as we speak right now, teams have been working across Treasury, Public Service and Administration, Department of Basic Education, Justice, to ensure that those areas that we've identified are being worked on. I am reasonably confident that by the end of this year, you would see a significant difference in terms of that. Similarly, in Limpopo, for example, the issues of textbooks are matters that are going to be addressed. With regard to the issues of generators, I mean, you know, it's something obviously one has to look at where electricity cannot reach those particular institutions. But Dinaledi schools don't generally have that particular problem. It's the issue of connectivity. What was said is that 264 schools have received computers. The remaining schools are included in a list of more than 2,000 schools where Telkom, where the Department of Basic Education, Communications, and Telkom South Africa have entered into agreement where there's going to be ICT provisioning to those schools. And in those more than 2,223, if I'm not mistaken, schools, you would have the remaining Dinaledi schools. So that should assist you in dealing with the matter. You raise the issue of mathematics teachers. It's very, very critical. And I think one of the reasons why we've been able to improve, you know, in relative to where we were 5 years ago in terms of mathematics, is we embarked on a task, particularly with regard to the Dinaledi schools, but we are expanding on it, of teacher development, not only for grade 12 teachers, but for grade 10, 11, and 12 teachers. More than 2,500 teachers have been trained on content knowledge. And in terms of our plans, we want to train another 2,000 teachers, specifically on content knowledge in mathematics and science. In that way, there we could make a difference. But when you look at our recruitment campaign for teachers, you know, you put the Funza Lushaka scheme, which basically provides for bursaries. Now, there are key areas. We do the screening. The department sits with the universities. Key areas are foundation phase, so that's very important. You can't neglect that area. Mathematics and science, languages, accountancy. Very, very important. So basically, learners who get the bursaries are selected on the basis of the need. And amongst the needs that we've identified is mathematics, science, and technology, very, very, very critical over there. And it's an attempt to basically draw that. In addition, in rural schools and hard-to-teach schools, teachers are entitled to a remuneration, to an incentive, when they teach in a rural area and teach the difficult subjects. And those subjects include the languages, mathematics, and science. So these are some of the efforts. Provinces basically are reminded about the possibilities of retention as a result of these norms and standards that we've initiated, and we do hope that they occur. We've also said that in regard to the recruitment for Funza Lushaka, we must pay particular attention to recruiting learners from these deep rural areas so that they could go back to the communities and serve them. But the realities are also this, that people tend to migrate from urban to rural, whether you are a teacher, whether you are a dentist, whether you are a lawyer, or even whether you are a learner. So those are realities that we have to accept. So what we've got to do all the time is ensure that we train more. Because even if you train a teacher in mathematics, and the teacher leaves that particular profession, he or she is probably going to be in an economic area aligned to that particular skill, which would contribute to the development of the country. And so basically you've got to be open-minded and you can't be parochial about how you deal with the matter, but it's a reality. With regard to Mbilwe, we've been there, the Superintendent General, for example, has been there four times. I can tell you about the performance, and we can take pride in the fact that that school produces not less than 40 distinctions in mathematics and science every year. And if you go to the school, it's so rural, you won't even believe it's a school of great distinction, which produces more than 100 distinctions in mathematics and science. And not less than 15 learners per year get 100% in mathematics and 100% in science, and they don't have any failures. What are the ingredients for success? Firstly, good, sound leadership and management. You have a good principal, good deputy principal, and competent, dedicated teachers. Secondly, complete community buy-in. You know, in the Dinaledi school in Mbilwe, the classes are actually overcrowded. And the principal, I told the principal, but you know, you achieved so much. How is it that your classes, how do you manage with the overcrowding? You know, you should probably be having a screening. She says, how can I turn away a child who comes with his or her parent, who knows that education is the only way in which they could break out of the cycle of poverty? So notwithstanding the enormous challenges that they face, that's why they have an additional laboratory now, that's why we provide the kind of support, both the private sector and government, to be able to achieve that. The other school is Dendro, is it Dendro? Dendro. Not far from there. It's almost in competition with that school. So it's a myth that rural schools can't perform. It's a myth. It means so the third ingredient then, is competent teachers, and the third ingredient is community ownership. Every parent in that village that basically makes it his or her task to ensure that that child is in school on time, doing the homework, because they know that that school produces the excellence out there. So your actuaries, your engineers are primarily coming from Limpopo. Believe it or not. Notwithstanding the intervention. There it is. So we are looking at these matters here. With regard to the issues raised by Mr. De Beer, thank you so much, Honourable Member, for the CAPS. You know, somebody had raised the issues about CAPS. And, you know, we are so delighted that it is universally accepted, that everybody feels that the CAPS is a consolidated, cohesive curriculum which really assists everybody. It defines precisely what has to be done, when it is to be done, and how it's to be assessed. And we did so because we've been listening to the educators, the teachers, the practitioners, and I think that has been the advantage there. With regards to science and math, I've explained to you the approach that we followed, and I hope that assists you. You know, the textbooks are a huge challenge here. And what I think we should do is to provide every member of parliament and every member of the legislature and every councillor with the contact details of the national department to say, if you go to a school, if you go to a school and the school has not received a literacy and numeracy book in any of the grades, please contact this national department, because the national department has a dedicated unit that just deals with the issues of delivery. Now, what is the process involved in delivery? We basically seek already, for next year, we're already seeking information. Learner numbers, languages, and the different grades. So basically, because you've got to provide, and you've got your first edition language, that has to be signed by the principal. The principal then sends it to the district, and the district official has to sign. So when the national department receives it, it receives a document with a requisition signed by the head of the department as well as the principal of that school. Invariably, comes the beginning of the year. Mr. Fishy will tell you now that he's in Durban. The numbers change so dramatically because people migrate from rural areas to the town areas. And then there is a movement, inter-provincial movement, from towns and so schools, there's movements taking place. So whereas you had 10 isiZulu learners, you now have 20 isiZulu learners in class. So you're short of those textbooks over there. Now, we've got, every principal knows what the number of the department is. And what we can't understand is why is it that they don't contact the national department? Because within 24 hours, we usually sort out the problem within 24 hours because we've got a dedicated line, dedicated people to do it. And I think this is what we should do, is make sure that this information is made available to all public officials so that the national department can take responsibility in that. And I will personally look into the issues of the Northern Cape, Honourable Member, because I think it's critical that we do so. With regard to the Honourable Lewis and his issues over here, I think the variation issues we could ask either our CFO or Mr. Padiachi to deal with that. I'm not going to deal with that. I don't have the technical knowledge in those particular matters. But I certainly support your view. Not to 10 is not a passing, and I think it's quite obvious it's a type of error. And I raised it with the doctor before we came over here. Now, an interesting thing that you've raised about issues of feeder schools. You see, in as much as the Dinaledi principally, before, Dinaledi focused only on grade 12. And my argument has been, and Mr. Sishi would be aware of it because he's been long enough, and Mr. Padiachi would be aware of it. You can't focus on grade 12 without looking at grade 10 and 11. And you can't focus on a high school without looking at what happens in the primary school. Because inevitably, we can't choose Dinaledi schools as schools of excellence. These are schools that are made available, accessible to communities. And you can't say only these kids here from these primary schools are going to come to the Dinaledi schools and the other children must walk another 15 kilometers. So the disadvantage we have, even though we identify a school as a Dinaledi school, we can't create barriers for entry. Now, how do you mitigate that? You mitigate that by ensuring that those schools that feed into the high school are supported adequately. So amongst what is the nature of the support? One is that there's interactive discussions between the HODs, the heads of the department and the primary school to say these are the expected standards with regard to this. We are prepared to assist you and support you so that when the learners come into the high school, the skills in terms of literacy and numeracy are at the very least adequate. The second intervention basically is you're seeing a macro intervention is the promotion of literacy and numeracy in all universally. The third intervention that is going to assist us significantly in terms of our Dinaledi schools and our subject choices would be this year. Every learner in grade 9 across the country will be tested in terms of his or her ability in literacy and numeracy. So the annual national assessment test, which was a pilot last year for grade 9, is now going to be a universal test which every learner is going to write. That would be a good indicator for subject choices when you go to grade 10. So if a learner excels in numeracy, why should that learner do literacy, mathematical literacy, when the ability is so high in terms of the achievement on an internationally benchmarked test? So that would basically assist us also in terms of doing that. We have to promote mathematics and science, and we've discovered, in fact, we are busy with a task. Mr. Padiachi will tell you. There are three things that I could tell you in this regard, and our country might not be aware of it. You know, as we speak today, we have a database of 11 million learners in terms of where they are, and you know, their names, their parents' names, which school they are attending. So it's the learner unit tracking system. And we've finished the first phase. And the second phase is basically to clean up, to make sure, verify that there, to make sure we are aware of their performance. So we can feed into it vaccines for the foundation phase. Has the child been vaccinated? What is the language of learning and teaching of that particular child? Has the child moved from one school to the other? I think within a year, as a result of this particular intervention, we would be able to make better, much more informed choices. And the database is managed centrally over there, and you could basically tell me, and I could tell you every learner in that particular school and what his achievement has been over a period of time. So it's a positive step towards the future. We haven't perfected it, but I think it's very, very positive, and we at least have a database in relation to that. Now, with regard to the infrastructure, Mr. Lewis, the CSIR is basically attached to the Department of Science and Technology. And part of their task is to look at innovative ways of building and designing buildings, and they're looking at the green environment itself and what kind of footprint do you leave in the environment. So they're doing some research there. So they do work, for example, in the Eastern Cape, they are involved in Kofumbaba, where they're exploring different methods of sanitation, rain harvesting, construction of schools, etc. But they are not an implementing agent. The Department of Development Bank of South Africa is indeed an agent that is taking over the responsibility of ensuring that it manages the delivery of infrastructure. But we have one additional phase which makes it very, very much easier. The PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, works now with the Department of Basic Education, Development Bank of South Africa and Public Works to ensure that those items of delivery, whether it's a school, whether it's a clinic, whether it's a road, occurs as it should occur according to the timelines, and all the bureaucratic challenges and the constraints that are there are indeed removed. I think that would add tremendously to the management of this particular process, because not only is the department going to account to you, it's going to account to the PICC, to the president and the president's team in terms of infrastructure delivery. So the pressure is even far greater, and the attention is much more focused. Now, the other thing that we could also share with you is on the 8th and the 9th of June, we're going to have a mathematics summit where we're going to speak to the tech stakeholders and tell them, what is it that we're going to do? This is what we've got. This is what we're doing. What is it that we could do better to enhance our ability to improve in the quality of passes in mathematics and science. So various initiatives are indeed taking place. And we're going to be hosting this country in 2014 to the International Maths Olympiad. You know, the Olympiads before, and colleagues, because you come from different provinces, and I'm sure you'll be interested to know, in the previous term, I was very concerned, I was very excited about Olympiads. But the level of participation of blacks in the Olympiads was something below 10%. Today it's more than 70%. Because it's gone cascaded right down. And all Dinaledi schools participate in the Maths and the Science Olympiads. And I think we are basically moving forward as a nation. And people don't see the impact of it. They won't see it so dramatically. But at the level of participation and the level of competence of our learners, it's quite remarkable how we are moving slowly but surely forward. So I think I take heart in it, but I'm not defending the fact that there is a decline in terms of numbers, and it's something that we have to speak to in a very serious way. And lastly, obviously, we are doing, with our post-provisioning establishment, we are linking it with the subject choices, the subject the competencies of teachers to teach in those areas. There are instances where you would find a school requires one maths teacher, and it has three competent maths teachers who are teaching, one of which whom is teaching mathematics, and the two others are teaching English and history. And we've got to basically deploy our people in the right way according to their competencies and skills, so that it is spread equally. So that is an assessment that is being taking place by the department on behalf of all the provinces, because they all have problems with regard to the deployment. Now I'm going to try to go a little quicker for the benefit over here, my comrade and Ms. Mutsutsi. I accept your challenge, but I do hope you. Firstly, with regard to inappropriate means unsatisfactory from a safety perspective. So it includes all mud schools and all other unsafe structures. So it may be a tin structure, for example, or corrugated iron structure, which is unsafe. So it's those phenomena. What you have in these tables here are the number of mud schools as provided for in the country. So we're saying by the end of 2014, we would have eliminated all mud schools. And indeed, Mr. Lewis, the table, if you look at the table in, I don't know what the page here is, but there is a table setting out precisely what is going to happen this year, what has happened last year, what is going to happen this year in terms of numbers, and what is going to happen in the year thereafter. So the department in its projection has indeed indicated that it's on page 4. So that should assist you. So that would be the inappropriate structures that we spoke to, and I've spoken about the PICC in relation to the state construction companies. State construction company would include basically your public works, you know. But I'm saying it's uneven. You go to the Free State, they say they have no problems with public works. You go to the Eastern Cape, they say, please don't bring public works here. So basically you've got to assess the capacity from place to place. You go to the Western Cape, it's partially yes, partially no. But, you know, it just varies, and we've got to recognize that. So I think, Given the explanation, you would accept that there's a particular focus with regard to that. Teaching under the tree is a phenomenon that should have been eliminated. But, you know, there are some realities that we must recognize. Here, for example, you have a community, a small village out here, which basically where the villagers go to a high school 5 kilometers away. Either the traditional authority or that village now decides, no, 5 kilometers is too far away. Even if there is transport, we're going to establish our own school. So for maybe 80 or 120 kids, they appoint 15 teachers without consulting with the head of department or the department, and they set up their own school. No structures, nothing. They say, no, this 3 year is for A, this 3 year is for B. They haven't applied for registration. They haven't, you know, there's no conversation. But simply because they feel the distance is too far for the children to travel, they set it up. Then they call the newspaper to say, please, tell us, why is it that they're not providing teachers for us? Why are they not providing a school in this village? Now, if you have a school with 8 grades and 110 learners and you have 14 teachers, does it make sense? You ask, you tell me. And I'm saying that we shouldn't just basically take things arbitrarily and say, well, we see a picture of children under school and accept that there's no school provided. It might well be that the community is being mischievous in doing what it's doing. And that is the thing. I think the phenomenon of teaching under school is almost gone. I don't say it doesn't exist at all, but it's almost gone. And with what we're doing now in terms of our infrastructure program, certainly by 2014, it should not be a phenomenon that exists within what is happening. But again, the realities of migration cannot be ignored. You go to an informal settlement, there's 100,000 people today. Go there in 18 months, it has 500,000 people. The school that you have there is not adequate for the number of 150,000, or just about adequate. Now suddenly it's more than doubled, or even trebled. Where are the children going to go to school? So you will always have a backlog of infrastructure in your education, in your health, and in your housing. That is a reality that we have to accept, and we can't close our eyes to it, but we will try to do the best we can under the circumstances. With regard to the issues of withholding resources, like in Gauteng might have its reasons for doing so. You know, it's big money that you're talking about. And they would say, listen, you know what, this tender, this procurement that has gone out, let's just check and verify it to see that it's gone through the processes and so forth. We're not going to make payment until we do so. Gauteng is generally extremely good in terms of its delivery. In terms of delivery of education, quality of education, in terms of infrastructure, etc. I do not know what the explanation is, but maybe the department can provide it. It might well be associated with an investigation in relation to this particular element. I'm not too sure. Now, the issue about the 30%, I don't want to go to it in our budget speech. In fact, we've got it, we'll distribute it to each member. Frequently asked questions. Our standards are not 30%. If a child writes 7 paper subjects and gets 30%, he or she cannot pass. We should know that. Maybe yes, maybe in the past yes, but now you can't. You can have passed 2 subjects at 30%, only 2. But the others, you have to pass above. And if you have a pass, you have a pass that will tell you you've passed matric. You have a pass that will enable you to go to University of Technology for a diploma, and you have a pass that would enable you to go to university. No university is going to accept you with an average below 50%. No University of Technology is going to accept you with an average of below 40%. So irrespective of whether you pass or fail, every learner knows that in order to pass, to go to university, you've got to achieve well, and your 50% is also not adequate. So I think, you know, while these are the standards that are internationally benchmarked, and certainly I am not going to argue for 30%, I will argue for at least 50%. I've always done so. But I have to recognize that it's a process. And we're saying if 2 out of the 7 subjects, there were only 6 subjects in the past, now it's 7 subjects, if 2 of the 7 subjects are passed at 30%, and the others are above 50%, is that unreasonable? And that is the question. And basically what we don't do, many of us, is we read what we see in the newspaper and believe that is the situation. But in fact, the demands, cognitive demands today for education are far higher than when you and I were at school. I mean, you could an F, you could go to university. With an F in maths, you could go to university. Because I know my colleagues who have been to university like that. They used to have C, D's, and E's, and F's, and they used to go to university. Try it today? No chance. Not even Fort Hare, not even any other university is going to accept you with that kind of a pass. So your cognitive demand is higher. But people don't realize, and I think we should understand that. You know, the blacks, you would probably have, out of 100% that had to go, could go to school, you would have 10% that were indeed going to high school. And from that 10%, you would have 5% would basically go to university without failing because of the poor quality of education. Now, it is those 5% who say, you know, notwithstanding the poverty, notwithstanding the disadvantages, look at me, I was able to go through. I started school in 1966 in Rustenburg. Well, I started high school in 1966 in Rustenburg, 10-6. We were 32 children. We were 32 children in class. In 1970, I was the only one that had a university pass, university admission pass, out of 32 children. When my children went to school, they had 100% pass. It's a process. It's a process that takes place as communities become empowered, invest more in education, things improve. My children went through university. They all went to public schools, not private schools, public schools. But the same school that I attended, they attended. And at that time, the pass rate was 5%. Now it was 100%. So which education was better? The former education or the current education? And I'm just saying, be realistic about it. These figures, the statistics are available. I can prove it to you. And I just think we're very unkind to ourselves in terms of that. With regard to quintiles, and I'm glad you're raising this here, we've already contracted quintiles 1, 2, and 3. We said, you know, you can't distinguish between those three quintiles. Because poor is poor, you know. Very poor, to have three levels of poverty doesn't make sense. So your allocation basically in terms of quintile 1, 2, and 3 is gone. We're looking at quintile 4 and 5, and we're trying to basically focus on the issues of inequality in a way that makes sense in terms of funding, in terms of providing. But we forget, for example, that there are more than 8,800,000 children that are being fed daily. I mean, it's an incredible achievement in terms of our system, and I think that's quite remarkable. Now, let me, ma'am, thank you for raising this in the Eastern Cape. It is our task. No, for raising, in other areas as well. You see, Limpopo has a problem as well. Yes, I know. It's a huge problem. We have to look at this issue of infrastructure in a very, very urgent and compelling way, because if we don't do so, we're going to fail. I am not at all satisfied. I'm not defending the department in terms of its dilatory or its delay in the provision of the mud schools, the 49 mud schools. I think they should have been quicker. I think they should have been more organized. I think they should have been better. Okay, I understand the circumstances. But it's still not good enough for me. And I'm saying to you now, please call them every quarter to you. And call the minister as well, because we are politically accountable. To say, look, this is what you said to us, deputy minister. 3 months have gone by. These schools are, the expenditure is now still below 20%. Can you give us an explanation? Perhaps the president should appoint somebody else in the position. I don't mind if you put that question, because I think we should take that responsibility, and so should every official within the department do so. So what the assurance that I can give to you is where we were in infrastructure last year is certainly not where we are now. I can say very confidently that the civil works have been done, the foundations have they're busy with the foundations in many of them, and there's the engineer. She's got the photographs of each. I told her, don't just come here. Come with a photograph visually. So that if a member wants to see where you are in relation to a particular school, they have that information. So that information is available to you. And Chairperson, now lastly, with your questions, if I could deal with them, the Dinaledi grant itself. You know, the Dinaledi issue, for the first time we have a grant. And for the first time, I must say that there's a much more organized way in which the Dinaledi is met. One of the reasons why I'm meeting with the coordinators of the province is to say that Dinaledi is not something incidental. If you are receiving a grant that is so huge, surely you ought to have a dedicated person who is senior enough to coordinate that activities in the Dinaledi schools in the province. Because if you cannot do so, we will do so on your behalf. And this is where you basically see it. But you would see, for example, You take the example of KZN, and in here, Mr. Sishi is from the National Department. He will tell you what's happening to Dinaledi now as compared to last year is chalk and cheese. 12.320 million expenditure, 12.320 million, total number of allocation, they spent it. And because those resources are now available and because of the particular focus that we're paying to the management of that day, I think you're going to see quarter by quarter a significant improvement, but your concern is a legitimate one. The pass rate is a matter of concern, but we tend to forget that if you take the number of Dinaledi schools, which are less than 9%, they contribute to more than 23% of the passes over 50% in mathematics and science. Now, if we recognize that Dinaledi schools are in our rural areas and in our townships, in principle, and that the learners there are, if not 95%, at least 90% African. And these African children contribute to 23% of the passes above 50% in mathematics, although in number, numerically, they are less than 9% of the schools. Then it means that something right is happening. What is not right is really the level of failure. I mean, you can't have a Dinaledi school performing where you have 1,000 kids in Dinaledi school, or even 8,000 kids between 0 and 30% failing. I mean, it's just not acceptable. And I'm saying to you, honestly, it's a great concern. And it's something that we're looking at. And as we report, as we've reported in our technical subjects, we will have to report to you regularly in terms of the achievement there. So the school infrastructure chair, your views and my views are not any different. We share the view. And I'm hard on myself, yes. But I'm saying we could have done that. I'm saying that to you, honestly, we could have done better. The technical schools, I'm very confident that this year and next year is going to be much better than the previous years in terms of what has happened in the province. But we have a formal agreement, a resolution of the Council of Education Ministers that the national department is entitled to go school by school with the province and ensure that the appropriate interventions are being made. That has not happened before. That is what is happening now, and I think we're going to see that. So, Chair, these are my responses. I'm sure Mr. the CFO and maybe Ms. Diale would want to add to that. May I be just excused for 30 seconds while they do so, Mr. Chair, and I'll join you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure why there's a difference between our figures and National Treasury figures, but the figures that we included, the 59 million, is what we spent up to end of March. I have a copy of the BES report that shows how much we spent. But what I think happened there is the figure that was the 839,000 that they were showing. Its expenditure at a certain period in the financial year, because it was at a certain stage that amount. Now the one on the allocation for the technical school, I don't know, because we have the allocation letter from National Treasury that is showing us how much was allocated to us. So I'm sure that one can be explained by Treasury where it comes from, because according to the letter we checked after the meeting when we were here last time, that is the correct figure that we have included.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Edgar Sishi from the National Treasury. On the first issue with respect to the expenditure number, I think we have more or less sorted that out. There was a technical issue, but there was certainly a report that came on the IYM having that 890-something thousand rand. We have during this week received an appropriation statement from the department, which is, those of you that have dealt with these matters will know, is generally the precursor to the financial statement submission, showing the 59.68 million rands expenditure. So whether that's related to something on the system with respect to posting the expenditure or the classification, which has happened in the past in a number of departments, it's probably along those lines, but we have received a report now saying 59.6 million rands there. At this stage, it's difficult for me on the issue of the allocation on the technical schools. The allocation is what it is in terms of both the allocation letter and the Division of Revenue Act. We'll just have obviously to take a look at what they got and how it matches up. But I wasn't aware that there was a problem with respect to the allocation amount on the technical schools, Chair. So that's something that I would have to follow up with the department later on. Thank you.
To the secretary of the correct figure, because I would suppose that that should be in line with the Division of Revenue figure. So I wouldn't also understand why the different. Yes, Mr.
Just a follow up on that one. If we're talking about 2011 numbers, then it's either, remember that there would be a main allocation in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. But also, it's important to, when the number is put up, to recognize whether it includes or excludes the provincial rollover amount. In other words, it's quite possible that even though national government has allocated a certain amount of money, and that will always stay the same, that a province which has previously underspent on that grant and has kept that money, in other words, the money has been retained and has not been surrendered, may have rolled it over, and their own number shows something there. But that's an easy thing to sort out. It's just a simple matter of saying, what is the number that you have in terms of the allocation for national, which is the same as what the National Department of Basic Education will have, and what is the adjusted number, which includes the rollover, which we always have as National Treasury. In fact, we have both numbers. So it's not a case of the numbers are different in the sense that one is wrong from the other. They're different because of the way in which a certain rollover amount would have been included by the province. But we will sort that out, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sishi. Thank you very much, the department. Honourable members, we'll have 5 minutes break, and then we come and finish off with the two remaining departments. Those who want tea, there's tea outside, I'm told. Just for 5 minutes, and then we're back and finish in 30 minutes.
Thank you.
No, we are finishing now in 10 minutes. I don't think we'll do the whole agenda. I'll cut it short after these two provinces. 1 o'clock we adjourn. 10. Can you tell this guy to come in? Hey, even in here it's very cold.
Thank you for the opportunity. The province of KwaZulu-Natal is 23% of education in South Africa. 23% of all teachers are in KwaZulu-Natal, 23% of all schools and learners are in the province. Over the last 3 years, KwaZulu-Natal has improved its past performance by almost 10% from 58% to 68%. Quite clearly, despite the challenges that we have in the province as the largest provincial system, we can see steady improvement, and quite largely is because of government inputs such as the grants in question. I'm happy to report, Chairperson, overall, that the expenditure of KwaZulu-Natal in Dinaledi, in the Dinaledi grant, is 100%. It will be reflected, Chairperson, though, that this spend of the province is, in fact, we've slightly over-expended to 13,543. Which will be reflected in the final report. But the fact of the matter is, in all our grants, we have expended, and we have a breakdown on page 4 of how these funds were expended in equipment, in accommodation and subsistence, study guides, e-learning connectivity, textbooks, e-learning DVDs, and that gives us the total spend of the province. And the next page, on page 5, begins to break it down to specifics in terms of where all of the resources have gone. But overall, Chair, I think what our report will indicate is that we have stuck exactly to the norms set by the National Department in what we spend in the province. This applies both in this report as well as the report on our expenditure on the recap. I do, though, Chairperson, need to indicate that the province of KwaZulu-Natal, as you would know, we have had difficulties in the expenditure when it comes to the next grant, which is the recap. And I do want to spend a little bit of time there, because I think with the Dinaledi, we really have nothing negative to report, except that we need more money to spend in KwaZulu-Natal in regards to mathematics and science. Chairperson, I think because of the fact that we have a 95% expenditure in terms of the recap, allocation was 38 million and we spent 36.7 million, and we've requested a rollover of 1.8 million as a result of the equipment which we are awaiting, which is not available on stock in the country. But other than that, we will have slightly an over expenditure in this item. I think the issues for KwaZulu-Natal with regards to these inputs, Chairperson, would be that clearly the province have got challenge when it comes to infrastructure overall. The backlogs of infrastructure in the province of KwaZulu-Natal is estimated at around 75 billion. If you were to get us to have the ideal classroom with necessary equipment for all schools in all 12 districts, that is how much you will need. We have got a budget of around 2.5 billion for infrastructure overall in the province. And if you, even if you were to give us an advance of that budget for the next 10 years, we will not even begin to make a dent to the infrastructure backlogs that we have if you take into account renovations and other issues that are related to infrastructure management. So as a province, Chairperson, and overall, and this is my attempt to conclude my presentation, is that as a province, and I think that we're not unique in this regard, it's the national question. There is a need for us when we speak of infrastructure to go beyond just what government is able to give us, to work on PPP models and experiment with those to make sure that we are able to deal with the issues of infrastructure. Otherwise, we shall always come here and report 100% expenditure, but if you go back to the reality of schools, you see no difference, because whilst we are building one school, just this year we finished 14 new schools, but there are many more schools out there, some of them that are left because they are dilapidated, others because of migrations that are left, and there's overcrowding in other schools. So these are the challenges, but we are happy to report to this Honorable House that as the province of KwaZulu-Natal, every cent that is allocated to us, we are able to account for, and we are happy to see the improvements also in the performance of our young people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sisi. That was KZN. Honorable Member, just reserve your questions if you have any. I will now take the Popo. Do you have any questions, members, on KZN, so long we are waiting? Mr. Honorable De Beer and Makubela.
Question. When we visited KZN last year's National Council of Provinces, the NCLP, we were a team that had a pre-visit. We went to the area of Kranskop. There's a road from Kranskop going to the ocean. I don't know what you call that road, in what. We went down in the valleys. There's one school with 136 learners without toilets. But a small river runs close to the school buildings down in the valley. In Afrikaans, they call it the Hamadulas. There's no bridges. We went through the water with the combis. And they are just in need of quality education as the people in Creighton, Newcastle and Dundee. Those people down there in the valleys. Three school buildings, committed teachers, we met them. But that was a challenge. There were no toilet facilities. Nothing, zero. They go to the bush, down the stream. I was there. So it's not something I'm sucking out of my thumb. I just want to register this with you, because I don't have that opportunity to meet a department like this. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to know what type of stock which you cannot get in the country. If you have to get that stock, what will happen if it breaks? I'm asking this question because we had the same situation in the police. That's why you see the DNA is having a problem in the police. We got this sophisticated machine in America, and when it breaks, then you have to see that. Thanks. Honorable Liz.
Jim, thank you. I'm sorry the Deputy Minister's left, because we have an excellent example of a rural school achieving incredible results in my own home area, and it's called Indrasuti Primary, I think. And it's an example that I'd love this committee to see, where it is indeed the community involvement led by a very, very strong headmaster and strong staff with no electricity, no laid-on water. It's tear-jerking when you go there. And yet down the road you go to Colenso Combined School, which is a total disaster. Window panes broken, teachers in two factions, school kids wandering around the streets of Colenso, and it's all about the community and leadership, and we have two examples very close together, and perhaps you know them both, Mr. Sishi. And the question of never catching up on infrastructure, never is a long time, but it's just not happening given our resources. I think that the emphasis should be more on the education than on the infrastructure. Now, outside Ladysmith, there's a school, Bearville High School. January last year, there were 200 children squashed into a room this size, and the roof was leaking and so on. But one call to Craig, and the situation was dealt with. And I think it's an example, Mr. Chairman, of the kind of school where the community decided they wanted a school. And although there were teachers who were department paid. And so it just arrives. And then I get called and I'm asked to make a political statement about it. And I think, no, this is not the time to make a political statement. This is the time to get hold of Craig Lancaster, who's the manager of that Northern Italian. Say, we've got a problem here. What can you do about it? And the department then dealt with it. And I think that the Deputy Minister's commitment to give us all the contact people, and you can solve problems like this. Sometimes the Colenso one, I think, is a political statement required, but because it's such a political issue, it's two political parties vying for dominance in the school, and it's not mine. Neither of them is mine. But we won't go into that one. But the point is that in KZN we also have these good examples and bad examples. And quite honestly, if I had the choice, Honourable De Beer, I'd send my kids to the school down in the valley with so few kids and the water and barefoot and limited facilities. I think toilets are a requirement, so I would agree with you on that one. Because that's such a wonderful, wonderful place to live and get educated. Provided you do get educated, and sometimes you don't, and you don't foul up the stream with excrement. But we have some beautiful valleys like that, and I hope you appreciate it. But I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, through you too.
Thank you. Let me take Limpopo. I'll come back to Mr. Limpopo. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Chair. The other background information, as you directed, is quite really the same as the DP has given.
Mm-hmm.
I'll only be speaking to two slides. On this slide, we just want to indicate the variance of 16.8, and is the one which we'll have to talk to in terms of the reasons for non-expenditure on the next slide. This slide, the 9.4 is as a result of invoices which are there and have not been paid by the year end. And basically, because the payment processes immediately after the Section 100 was implemented have to be verified and go back and forward, and where investigations are required, they have to be taken into cognizance. And as a result, invoices up to 9.4 were not paid. The uncommitted funds, we are trying to give an explanation to say that the supply chain management processes were slowed and stopped immediately, but there were processes, for example, of 3.8 million on the learner teacher support materials. because of the ongoing investigations with regard to the service provider who was supposed to process the orders could not be processed, and the investigations have been going on, and now the service provider has been terminated formally. There was also an equipment of 3.5, and on this one, the advertisement ran, the evaluation was done, adjudication was done, but the recommended processes, I mean the appointments could not be continued with because of some of the areas for investigations, because the intervention team felt that they need to do a lot of work with regard to the appointments, with regard to the processing of orders and payments. And this is the status of the technical recap area. Then I will then quickly run to the Nalevi conditional grant. The background information is more or less the same as well. On slide number 15, also what we need to talk to here ourselves is the variance of 6.5 and how it actually occurred on slide 16. Out of that amount of 6.5, there is 4.2 of invoices which need to be paid, which have not been paid by the year end due to the verification processes, but also the uncommitted funds of 2.3 as a result of the same investigations, because part of this was around the supply of what will assist the schools and the teachers in terms of necessary support materials. The other reason for that was that there were some at the beginning of the summer around January, the issues around disapprovals of processes and the planned activities, because as we're trying to settle within the administration, I think a number of areas were not actually moving quite well. Because we need to go backwards and forward with the intervention team, because they have to satisfy themselves that certain things are actually correct before they can do any other forward implementation and recommendations. Thank you.
So what is the
As I was talking to the CFO, I think the DBE has it correct, and we, as they are saying, we are actually meeting to see how we can rectify that. I think the report by DBE is quite correct.
That's Limpopo. Any questions for clarity, Honourable Makubela, Honourable DBE? Over to you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. As I say, we are having only 51 Dinaleri schools in the province. Are you not moved by the performance of other schools in order to increase this number? Is this number enough for the Limpopo? And what is this? Can you explain this Department of Basic Education selection criteria? What is that? Thank you.
Chairperson, I just want some clarity. We engaged with the Department of Education and the Popo on Wednesday, the 26th of March, in Polokwane, and got a briefing from the department as well as the administrator deployed in terms of the intervention, referring to Section 101B of the Constitution, 1996. The information that is tabled here in this meeting does it correlate with the information we received in the briefing in March when we were in Limpopo. The CFO is here. I don't see the administrator present here, Mr. Kamdali, the one that speaks so fast. at that high-toned voice. Yes. I'll never forget it. I just want some clarity on that, please. Because it's crucial.
KZN.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you. I will start with the questions from Honorable De Beer with regards to one particular school in the Krugersdorp area. I know the area very well. It's that road you are talking to is road to Inkandla. The general problem in that area is that because it's such a sparsely populated area, because it's a typical rural area, you have one house here, another one on the other side of the hill. Whether you put a school on the other side of the hill or on this side, there will be many children who have to walk distances to get to where you have put the school. The problem now in such circumstances is that, for example, in the area you are talking about, there is an official school called Kwamachola. That's an official school which has ablutions, which has got everything that you need. But that school is just too far from everybody else, even though it's suitably situated for us as a department. But the fact of the matter is that as a result of this phenomena, not only in Krugersdorp, but in the whole province, you have this notion of satellite schools developing, where communities, without applying to us, without talking to the department, just set up some informal structure without the department. And we got to know about it only when it's already in operation. The norm for developing a school is at least 200 learners. So there is no school that will have 136 learners that is official. That means if you have 136 learners in that particular school, it's a satellite school, which means it's an illegal school that is not accepted by the department. We are very sympathetic to this, Chair, because as much as we are saying it's an illegal school, the reality is that there are learners who are just too young to walk as far as to the school that we are saying is an official school. So there is a need for us to continue in the way we roll out infrastructure, to be creative around issues of this nature. It's a matter which we are discussing, but in most of the cases where I think the Deputy Minister did speak to the issue of satellite schools and the quality that goes there. Because what then happens is this. As I say, the school is Kwamachola. What happens, we allocate teachers in terms of the post-provisioning norms for Kwamachola. But then what they do, they break the school down into probably three components. Some part would be someone's house or somebody's backyard house, where they would then house some of the learners, and some of the teachers will teach there, others will teach on the other side. We don't accept that because it goes against everything we stand for in terms of our pursuit for quality education. We do sympathize with the issues, but the fact of the matter, as government and as department, it is something which is not acceptable that learners would learn under such conditions. There's two other schools which I've discovered in the same area as well, which are also other satellite schools, but we are working with the communities there, and I think there is some understanding that is developing about it. I think Honorable Lewis also did allude to Intlasuti, a school, no electricity, no water. Generally, such schools will have absolutely no facilities because the official school will have everything that would be allocated. But then you find that a satellite school does not have those facilities. But there is a point, Chair, which has been raised by Honorable Lewis, which is about emphasizing what is the alternative under such circumstances. And his point is that we must emphasize education, which means where we have a school and we have a problem of infrastructure, let us look into the quality of teaching and learning that takes place in that school. And central to provision of quality teaching and learning to any environment is that a qualified teacher who's committed, and a qualified teacher who's committed and who is supported with the necessary resources. KwaZulu-Natal has 89,000 teachers, chairperson. If you look at this establishment of 89,000, it was 84,000 teachers in the financial year 2007-2008. And we increased that establishment by 5,000 additional teachers in that financial year, the same year that OSD was promulgated. Now, once you have 5,000 more teachers and you increase the salaries of teachers by at least 20% of your budget, and you've got salary agreements that will that says that for the next 16 years you will have to increase the salary of the teachers by at least 1.5%, that means every year the same establishment has become more and more expensive for the department. And unless there is an increase in our budget, a relook into the expenditure of education, not only in KwaZulu-Natal, in the whole country, because the issue that I'm raising now is a national matter in terms of the funding of education, you are going to have a situation where provinces gradually are unable to fund education. The good example is that right now there are salary negotiations. I already have a budget.
I wanted you to go back to that question of what you call satellite schools and the legality of such. How many such schools do we have in KZN? And what is the status of the teachers and qualification of those learners? Do you recognize them, or what's the situation?
There are 35 schools that we have categorized as satellite schools. We've engaged with communities because it's generally in three districts: Umzinyathi district, Zululand district, and the Uthungulu district. That's where you have such schools. We have engaged with local leadership, particularly amakhosi, because generally where you find such schools, they are initiated at sometimes by local chiefs, or in some cases there are certain councillors that will be involved. We have tried to assist in some cases. We provide mobile classrooms temporarily to assist, but we are not encouraging a situation like that. In terms of the teachers that are there, you generally have a school probably of about 300 learners in the area. But of these 300 learners, because most of those schools would be your combined schools, which means there will be a school, there will not be your normal primary school or high school, but it will be a school from grade R to grade 12. Which means in that particular school you will have young primary school learners, grade R kids, standard 1 to 3, grade 1 to 3 kids, and then the community will say, no, they are too young to travel, so because most of them come from this side, they will then be accommodated in an area which the community will agree would be an appropriate area for that. But the teachers will still be the same teachers of the official school that you have allocated. The textbooks, the materials, the resources will be divided in that way. That's a practice which we have found exists in those areas. The unfortunate part of it is that the conditions in one of the schools that I've visited, they used an abandoned house, which happened to have been had wooden floors. You know what will happen if an abandoned house with wooden floors will have all sorts of creatures in hiding behind. It puts many of our young people in such danger. And therefore, our MEC and the head of department in the province, we have decided to really, really, you know, engage with communities in these areas, even prepared to go against the norm of 200 to actually say if there is sufficient motivation from a community that there is a good reason for establishing a new school, additional school to what we already have done. Let's do so, even though in terms of our policy, it's a school that is not viable. The arithmetics of it will be like that. The point, Chair, which I wanted to make about this is that the cost driver for provincial budgets is your personnel. It's your teachers in particular. KwaZulu-Natal's budget, 75% of that budget just goes to salaries of teachers. But if you look at those teachers, the attrition rate, we're losing about 5,200 teachers a year, just on natural attrition. Universities are only providing 1,800 teachers to us, which means every year we've got to make sure that there is a teacher in class, and we are therefore vulnerable in that if we cannot get teachers from your Funza Lushaka teachers or from teachers from other provinces, unqualified teachers then creep in the system. It undermines quality, and if we do not deal with it, a chairperson, it's going to cripple and actually reverse the gains that we have made. But we do try, chairperson, as we have demonstrated in the reports we've presented, that what is allocated to us, we do the best we can to make sure that each cent that is allocated to us goes to the quality, goes to the issues, goes to the areas that really, really are giving us pressures. The performance in mathematics and science in particular is not pleasing at the levels at which it is, but it is steadily, you know, showing the results of the interventions that we have put in place. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. Two questions. The issue of the selection of the Dinaledi schools was preceded by an audit undertaken by DB in 2008, where they were focusing on schools within quintiles 1 to 3, and also a need for geographic spread to improve access. And the schools should be teaching math and science. They should be having available teachers or posts so that we can then strengthen the teaching. There will never be enough, but that is within the provision of the grant. The other questions from Honorable De Beer has gone out? Okay. There is a strong correlation between the presentation we're making, but the presentation which we made when the committee came to Limpopo, it was generally requesting the department to give an exposition why the department is where it was, and hence the presentation there was taking from historical matters from 08, 09, 09, 010, 010, 011 moving forward, and where are the pressure points according to the assessments which we have done, and also assisted by DBE as we went to DBE twice or so in December, trying to show them where the challenges are before the work streams led by DBE were basically formulated. And that's what the report, which was presented to the committee, and today we're actually very specific to say, what are you doing and how far are you doing on the Naledi and technical recap? And basically, there's no contradiction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, Honorable Makuela, I won't allow you. That's a second.
Chair, it's the comment about why ordering equipment overseas. I think it's when your suppliers are unable to provide some of the heavy machineries for your workshops when we have such delays, Honourable. But it's not a policy of the department to go outside to purchase.
Okay. Happy? Honourable members, thanks very much, and officials from provinces, thank you very much. Unfortunately, I had to put pressures because we got plenary at 2, and we will not finish the agenda items. I will stop there at item number 7. The rest of the other item, agenda items, will be rolled over to the next meeting. And yes, I've got authority to roll them over. thank you very much. We will continue this interaction, provinces. And soon we will be visiting some of the provinces to satisfy ourselves if what we have been receiving as reports here is true and correct, like we have done with other departments. And drive safely back home, and this meeting stands adjourned. I thank you.
General. I don't know.